It's okay, we have finance section.
Representative Duncan has to go too, because he's got to get the finance.
Pass my bill out, man.
First order of business.
Okay, this is the House Judiciary Committee. The time is 1:22, and there's present our Representative Grunberg, Phillips, Larkin, and Cloud. The first piece of business will be taken up today will be House Bill number 217.
Are we taking House Bill 31 also?
Schultz's bill, yes, we'll take that up. Okay. We'll take up House Bill 217, which is Mr. Duncan's bill. Dealing with interest rates, providing for an effective date. Understand the interested parties and referring our amendments to offer.
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have had some discussion since our last meeting, and Representative Duncan can agree, can speak for himself, but I believe we have, at least he and I have agreement on amendments to this legislation. The amendment is before you. It is, again, in one piece, one amendment. The second half of it is the amendment that was before us. Before further discussion indicates that this amendment should be offered again, there is one slight change to it from the last time that it was offered. On the bottom line, the original amendment that was voted on by this committee yesterday said interest rates to apply to loans made in this state. The words "with respect" have been added just to clarify, I think, what is the was the intent anyway. That's not right.
The new words that have been added are after the word "apply" with respect to loans made. It's before it read "apply" in the state.
Oh, I see.
It was just right. Clarifying language.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Goodberg?
I understand that, I gather this is really three amendments to be considered in block. And the third one is something that's going to be deleted. Page 2129. That's delete section 7.
Let's go to Mr. Chairman, I would.
Mr. Phillips.
I would like to divide the question. I mean, even those parties may agree. That's what I'm saying.
Well, okay. There's a request to divide the question.
After all, I'm part of this committee.
You have a lot to say. May I inquire?
Yeah, Title 44.
What is Section 7? I have never noticed Section 7 before.
That was a proposed new section that Mr. Clarkson offered yesterday, and the committee voted down to this, whatever.
No, no. This was this line here in the original committee bill.
Oh.
What's the one with the Congress?
Does anybody have, actually we're missing three committee statute books. Is anybody present taking any of those in the place?
No,
because
no.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Actually, got one right there, but no, you're not talking about.
No,
but that's
oh,
what
I'm
going to tell us.
Oh, from Hayden's office. Good grief. Did you look at mine?
You run?
Or skip?
I don't think so.
Sorry, wait.
Okay, Mr. Clarkson, was it? I interrupted you a second ago. Were you going to suggest
let me
have Mr. Hall comment on these? Or was
it? Let me try to go through them first, and then,
okay.
And then we can.
Mr. Duncan, why don't you join us at the table? Good night.
Okay. What are you saying? Is 18
million? Mr. Chairman, the basic problem of several of this legislation that I've been trying to address is the so-called most favored lender doctrine. What that doctrine, I'm going to simplify it again, what that doctrine says is that a bank in this state may charge the highest interest rate that can be charged by anyone in this state. The effect is, in this state, that the banks and others, I'm referring to savings and loans and others, feel that they can charge an interest rate in excess of our usury limit. And that limit is the small loans limit, which is the highest in the state. There are two ways that you can address that problem, assuming you agree with me that it's a problem. The first is to amend the Small Loans Act interest rates down so that the people that take advantage of the most favored lender doctrine cannot charge those real high rates. Well, as we've heard testimony, there's other implications to that, particularly with regard to household finance and the availability of credit from small loan companies. The other option is the option offered in the second half of this amendment, starting page 2, following line 28. It is an election that is authorized in the federal law to override the most favored lender doctrine. The effect if this were adopted would be that all except national banks, because you cannot do this with regard to national banks, all the state chartered banks, savings and loans, and so on, would have to comply with the state usury rate. If we were to adopt that, the argument is, I think, and I'm really trying to simplify this now, so I may be missing some subtleties here, but the argument would be that the usury rate in the existing law, which is 45-45-010B, which is the first half of the amendment, is too low. If we got to comply with the state law is too low. If we don't have to comply with the state law, then we don't much care. That's a paraphrase. Since we are proposing to override the federal preemption, then the other half of the compromise, if I can characterize it that way, is to allow some increase in the percentage rate in the so-called usury statute. That is the first half of the amendment. If the current law provides that for loans under $25,000, the usury rate is 5 percentage points in excess of the discount rate. That's currently 8%. 8 plus 5 means that the effective rate now is 13% today. Could change. It floats with the discount rate. The proposal before you is to raise that to 6.5 points above the discount rate for loans under $10,000, or a total net rate of 14.5% today. And for loans over $10,000 but not more than $25,000, to be 10 percentage points above the discount rate, or an effective rate of 18%. The effect would be to raise the interest rate from 13 to 14.5 for loans under $10,000, and from 13 to 18 today for loans between 10 and 25,000. That is a compromise, and I think it's a fair compromise. Now, the third part of the amendment on page 2, and I'm not sure that this has been discussed with the staff and with everybody, would be to repeal the repealer. The effect is to reinstate 44-33-02-011, which I'm told is a notice requirement.
Right.
I yield to comments on that, whether that was discussed or what.
Yeah, I can speak to that, I think. That as long as you have a floating interest rate tied to the Fed, you've got to keep the present law in, and the present law is in 43-33-02-011. It's a conforming amendment. I've just checked that one.
Now, the other thing is that this amendment, as I look at it, as I go through, it's not technically drafted correct because there is no interest rate set for loans of exactly $10,000. So I would propose in my amendment, the second sentence of my amendment should read, the underlying language should read, for loans of $10,000 or under.
That way.
Right?
Yes, that's correct.
For loans. Well,
the way it was drafted, $10,000.
Everybody was going to make $10,000 loans with no interest.
$10,000.
Normally, it would be zero to the nines. That's the normal way to do it.
It's not that important. Mr. Chair, may I ask one question just for clarification?
Yes, but
as I understood, on the election to override federal preemption, as you explained it, what this language says is that the state chartered banks under this language cannot use the most favored lender doctrine. However, a federally chartered bank can. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chairman, that is our understanding. You understand that we're all
right
new students at this subject, but that is our understanding.
That's your intent,
the effect
anyway.
Of this would be to say that the nationally chartered banks still can take advantage of it because we can't preempt with regard to them.
Just want to be clear, that was what on the intent and on the record. And the reason why I ask that is because I don't know what the language with respect to loans made in this state has in relationship to the national bank's ability to use the most favored lender doctrine, and I'm not sure why that language was added, so I guess I would want to know why
the effect of the language. I don't know, it was a technical to clarify the effect is to narrow it, because apply in this state is a broader concept than to apply to loans made in this state. So if anything, we're narrowing. And it is with the understanding that national banks are out.
Okay. I think that's the understanding. I think I'm okay then. I just wanted that on the record to be sure that that was the understanding, that we were not trying to somehow say national banks could not use the most favored lender doctrine.
That's my understanding. I agree with you.
Okay, fine.
Second to the record, Mr. Taylor.
I have a technical move. I move this with the change I made.
Mr. Rindberg is coming.
Yeah, two things. First of all, I, in various throughout the years, I've read many times 45-4501-OB, and I think it's one of the most confusingly drafted statutes around, mm-hmm. just grammatically. It's a mess. And what I would be interested in, without changing the meaning at all, if they can make it so that it's in plain, simple English, a language is not even a lawyer or a banker can understand what it says. And I would just ask, when we send out this committee substitute, to have legal counsel look at the language and draft it so that it's readable. That's number one. Number two, I'd suggest a technical amendment in the second portion there. And again, the language, the way it's written here, I don't just like. So let me give you my suggestion, how I think it should be. In accordance with Section 525 of Public Law 96-221, comma, and then we would strike the next seven words, go down to the amendments to the Federal Deposit Insurance Act and these other acts prescribing interest rates and preempting state interest rates shall not apply with respect to loans made in this state. It makes it much clearer to read.
Mr. Chairman, I have read the federal law, and it uses the language that we use in this amendment. I guess I'd ask my staff for their...
You have to say that the state does not want this to apply?
Well,
something like that?
Something like that.
I think if you read...
I would defer to the staff who's talked to all these people all
around
the country.
Yeah, does the staff comment on this? Because usually the usual language you say...
The United States Code of Congressional and Administrative News specifically talks about this language, but I can go back and double-check it.
Why don't you do that? If this is what they want, we got to do it. But this is not the way we normally draft our statutes, that the state does not want some...
Let me see that.
This was drafted by our people after...
The new one?
I just asked them to look at both of those because
let me mark it. My max is not his mark.
If there's any question, I would rather precisely conform to what the feds want.
No question
rather than
about that.
Do the bill drafting.
No question about that.
Okay. Are you ready for the question?
Are we dividing the question?
Well, that's what I wanted to do because I'm frankly the speaker, Mr. Chairman. I really don't see the selection to override federal preemption does any good. Maybe switch real easy. I don't see the prevailing arguments when I'm saying it. I'm not convinced.
Look, Mr. Chairman, we've discussed that precise issue, the likelihood of people shifting from being state chartered to federally chartered. It's my judgment that's not likely to happen as easily as suggested by the witness yesterday, for a variety of reasons. If I can use Mr. Greening's bank as an example, it's been a state-chartered bank for many, many years and bases a great deal of its reputation and its advertising, frankly, on the fact that it's an old state-chartered bank, and I think that it would be a substantial policy judgment by them to become a federally chartered bank. And I think that kind of that kind of pressure would apply to discourage transfers.
Does the member still want to debate a question?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me ask Mr. Collins, what happens if...
You want it in blunt terms?
Yeah.
Or you?
Yeah. Why don't you just move
the blunt
term? Why don't you just move
the blunt term?
Why don't you just move section two before you move the other sections?
It's my understanding. Well, I was going to do section two first, but
right.
And that's the kicker.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that it may not be appropriate to have this on the record, but it's my understanding that through negotiation, an acceptable compromise between all parties has been arrived at. That Mr. Clarkson has laid out that compromise, and that's acceptable to the bill sponsor. And as a consequence, I intend to vote for those amendments with that in mind. I, too, would have liked to have seen the bill go forward unamended, but I appreciate the reasons for the amendments and why they were brought, and I'll accede to those.
We have a request for a division of questions. We're called first on as many as are in favor of the section that starts page 2, following line 28. Insert the following new bill section. So that will be.
They both start that way.
No. Up here it says delete all material after 28.
I see.
The First Amendment is new section 7.
Yeah.
Right.
Move the amendment.
Okay. Is there objection to the amendment?
Object.
Yes.
Okay. The objection notice is many are in favor. Raise your hands. Mr. Fox, Mr. Norton, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Bender. Opposed?
Mr. Phillips and Mr. Pettijohn.
Do we have a 3-3 vote here now?
No.
Mr. Phillips and Mr. Pettijohn. 4-2, right. The amendment passes. Mr. Clarkson?
Mr. Chairman, I move the amendments in Section 6 as a substitute for the language that's in the bill for 4548-01. Actually, it wasn't in the word.
Yes. Yeah, it is. You've changed those numbers now.
At the bottom of the page.
And that reads for loan, for...
Yeah, but that's part of the amendment. So I'll move that first part.
First. Yeah, okay, the first half of the amendment.
Object. Let me make it clear, what is this, what we're voting on here?
Yes, with the minor change I made there.
Or under 10,000?
Yeah.
Of under 10,000?
Please change your number.
10,000.
10,000 or under.
Oh.
10,000
or under. Mr. Chairman, I think it would be easier for the record if we were to make this number 1, this number 2, and the one on the back number 3. We've already passed number 2. We're on to amendment number 1 now.
Move amendment
number
1. Pass number 1.
We passed number 2.
We passed number 2, if you want to call it that. All right, we're now voting on number 1. As many as are in favor of amendment number 1.
I just want a clarification. I'm in favor of it.
Okay, great.
But what about your simple language so lawyers and bankers can read the...
With instructions to the staff to talk to legal counsel, and if legal counsel can do it in a simpler form, that they would come with a new committee substitute, and the first thing on Monday we'd review it and get the paper.
Well,
it's
grammatical.
Oh, grammatically, just do it.
Okay. Chair, I would be very cautious in that, and if there are any grammatical changes, arguably they wouldn't have to come back to the members of the legislature, but I certainly believe that they should be cleared with the staff and the advocates on both sides of the legislation.
I was going on after
the chase. Was
we could end up making this very clear, and yet then it would not be parallel to a whole bunch of other sections that are similar. But in any case, with that understanding, that we'll make it clear if it's possible. As many as are in favor of amendment number 1, raise your hand.
I objected.
Or you objected.
And I'm not voting yes.
Voting yes are Mr. Phillips, Mr. Clarkson, Mr. Miller, Mr. Winberg, Mr. Taylor. Opposed? Mr. Pettijohn.
Okay.
Mr. Clarkson.
Mr. Chairman, I move the third part of the amendment on page 2.
Okay. Is there objection to the amendment?
Object. Let me just see what it is here.
It's right here.
Page 10.
Line 29, delete all material.
You've
got to look it up.
All right, let me look it up.
4433-0201. Fritz, I'm trying to help you. Here. This thing right here. The bill originally deleted it, and we have to keep it in because it defines notice of the floating interest rate. As long as we have floating interest rate in section one.
Okay, fine, I remove the objection.
Objection's removed. Is there further objection? And the amendment number three is adopted. We now have the bill before us as amended.
Mr. Chairman, there's only one limitation. I would like to see a, I don't know whether you need to vote on this, a title amendment that reflects the addition of the federal preamble.
Where do we put it?
I want to make sure that it's in there so there can't be changes on the other side. Yeah.
Exactly.
Is that agreed?
Yeah.
Representative Phillips has a, Mr. Chairman, has a proposed amendment that he and I worked on to the title. It does not relate, it'll have to be further amended because of the interest rate.
I don't have it here.
Because the language now is an act relating to interest rates that's so broad it could become a Christmas tree. I mean, that's what that was.
So small companies.
What?
I would just propose an act relating to interest rate and electing to override federal preemption. Something.
Well, I suppose you could up the interest rates on student loans then under that title.
Yeah.
I'm concerned. Mr. Chairman, we're going to take up a couple of other bills, and the bill will pass out. What I want to do is to, if we get to a couple of these other bills, and give us a couple minutes to come up with a title, a new title, and I'll draft now.
Okay. Is there any other problem? Except for the title, is there any other problem?
We haven't talked about that, but I think the problem generally is amendments in the other body that we did.
I'd like to change the number in the prime sponsor name.
We've changed everything else.
Sir, I have no problem with you coming up with the title, assuming you're going to come up with that title today.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what I'd really like to do, quite honestly, is just kind of go back upstairs to the finance committee where I can sit back and relax.
Meat grinder here, right?
Come on, Nancy.
Thank you.
So I'm going to leave.
Yeah. You have our collective word, Jim's or Bill's.
Okay.
With one title or another.
If you give me, we just add these for about 10 seconds.
I need a motion to adopt the committee substitute and pass it out.
So moved.
So moved.
Right. Mr. Phillips, is there objection to that motion? Hearing none, Bill.
What was Don's suggestion?
Federal exemption.
What about federal exemption?
Preemption. And it.
And preempting the federal exemption?
Yeah, whatever that language is on paper.
I think we'll override.
Override, yeah. Here, I'll get it for you. Yeah, elections.
Override.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand.
For your protection, this title change. Yes, because they might stick on something about student loans and we're forced to vote no on everything. Or Alaska housing finance tax.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Let me see it first.
Okay, let me run this by everybody here. The title would read, an act relating to interest rates charged by banks and credit unions and interest rate and the interest rate on judgments and overriding federal preemption concerning interest rates and providing for an effective date.
Chris, does that sound?
Yeah, it's fine.
I move the title. Can we get Don back?
We've got four votes right here. We all
that's okay.
Yeah. Do you have a report?
You'll have to look at
it. Last night.
Mr. Thompson has been standing patiently by. Maybe we better try to get Don back.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman, we should go.
See if you can get
is this
covered it well.
Yes.
Can we go with the next one? Banks is off, or is small loans? Maybe we ought to say banking contribution. Okay, save, is that something else?
Don, we got the credit union in there.
Well, we got the credit union.
Savings loans.
If you have specific subject matters that you're interested in.
Let's say.
Banking contribution.
Where is it?
But I would like to.
It's already been voted on.
There was a form.
Sure it was.
Miller.
Yeah.
Do you have any objections? I think you gotta say banking institution.
Sure.
Maybe we should say it's financial institution.
Financial, yeah, that's better, yeah, financial institution.
The legislative, I don't have any problem with legislative council doing something with that, but just so that the general idea is.
Well, they may very well.
I tried to get some extra signatures out there, coach, but nobody wants to.
What's that? Well, you want the bankers out there to sign it?
Everybody in the hall.
Act Kirby out there, why not?
Thank you, unanimous.
Okay, we'll take up Mr. Thompson's bill now.
This is really banks.
Really?
Yeah.
$217.
Okay. Yep. Oh.
I'm not ready to discuss it.
Okay, very good. Thompson, would you like to join us at the table? We're back to Thompson's bill on school buses. We ran out of time the last time this was up, we didn't get it rescheduled. At least one member was talking about the, broaden the legislation, but he indicates to me that he's no longer interested in doing that.
No, I've been talking to the sponsor, I'm not going to go.
Okay.
Landlines?
No, lead bulbs. Right on shield level.
Tyler Green.
Spikes.
Yeah.
Or grenade, I'm saying.
No, unless the county don't.
Which section?
You're talking about fixing the grant, or?
I don't care.
I'm nervous about that, too.
All right, let's just leave it.
Okay.
That was just a reference suggestion.
Are you going to deny the bill?
I'm taking my vote back then, and I'm the swing here. If we can't do that.
A bill before us is House Bill number 240, relating to motor vehicles, and the subject is overtaking and passing school buses.
We have a new committee.
But I say, the member that was thinking in terms of an amendment, in the case he's no longer interested in that, if anybody else has any other amendments, or.
I do.
Mr. Phillips, go ahead.
On this bill?
On House Bill 240.
Okay. I just, at the will of the sponsor, I'd like to change the title to overtaking and passing school buses.
Yes.
Any problems with that?
Otherwise, it's going to be another same problem with the last bill.
I'm just going to go with yeah.
I don't have any problem with that, Mr. Chairman, if it doesn't affect the.
No, it doesn't affect.
No, adversely affect the bill.
No.
The only effect it has is it prohibits the other body from piggybacking an entirely extraneous but slightly the same subject bill onto it.
It's called insurance.
Motor vehicles is very wide.
Then I move that the title and the concurrence seems like from the sponsor, an act relating to overtaking and passing the school buses.
Is there object to that motion? None. The motion passes. Further amendments?
Chairman?
Yes.
Yes, Mike.
I'm sorry.
When you recognize me.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Okay, didn't we have, in our last hearing, we had a recommended language on lines 14, 15, and 16. Are we dealing with that?
Yeah.
The driver may not proceed until the school bus proceeds and.
And the flashing lights.
And then, and no longer illuminated, period, and then delete the rest of the line.
Yeah, put a period after delete, That was strongly recommended by some of the testimony.
Yeah, I can't do it was.
Yeah. Okay. So we strike the comma and add the word in. And then illuminated with a period at the end of that, and we'll strike the rest of it.
Okay. Are you proposing an amendment?
Yes, I do.
Okay, is there objection?
What I want to hear from the sponsor, PSA.
You want to delete everything after illuminated?
Yeah, the reason, if you remember, Dave, was that people didn't want school buses.
I don't have any problem with that, if that makes it kind of even comfortable with.
That's all I have.
Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, that section is amended. Mr. Clarkson?
I'm sorry I wasn't here for this, but, and maybe the question's been answered, but what, if this is adopted, to what extent does it alter what the current law is in Anchorage?
I'm sorry, in what?
Current law in Anchorage. Does this, would this alter the current law in Anchorage? Has this question been discussed?
My understanding is, Dr. Clarkson, that most of this is in regulations rather than law. And that's one of the reasons we've drafted this, to get it out of regulations and into law. But I can tell you, I'd be happy to defer to.
I think it does, Don. I think it changes it.
Have we heard from the municipality?
Yes, we have.
He's a good problem to us.
Both Anchorage and.
Municipal traffic coverage.
Versus the state regulations?
Yeah, the question I have is whether or not there has been local ordinances adopted in Anchorage regulating school bus questions that this may some way override. I don't think they can because it's a Harbor municipality, but.
Based on the lack of that being brought out, Don, in four different committee hearings, and when we did have people from both Madison and Anchorage down in three of those four meetings testifying, I would be comfortable suggesting no.
Do you recall who testified from Anchorage?
Tom Hyatt.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, recognize the representative from DOE.
And my school bus.
What'd you pull up
would
here?
You join us at the table.
Is this the bill's last referral?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Romaine Curran with Department of Education. I administer the school transportation program. Would you like me to say who has testified in the past?
No, I'm more interested in the ultimate question, whether this will change the law in Anchorage.
I'm not aware of what law you may be referring to. The contractors and the school district people have never made any reference to a law in this regard in Anchorage. They're all very supportive of this legislation being passed. They want this. There is a real problem.
I understand
in
that,
area.
But we're basically creating a new crime. And the question is that any way inconsistent with what's currently on the books in Anchorage with regard to whether you can pass a school bus.
Mr. Clarkson, we definitely are changing the law very significantly in provision D, which is not found in any books, any place where a third party might be liable.
Examples would be, let's say, in Anchorage, it's 30 feet, not 25 feet, or less.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get to.
I'm not aware that there are any local
we need the Anchorage
laws regarding
codes. That's what we need.
I'm not willing to hold it up for this today.
I'll have something after the end here.
Mr. Chairman, I move to delete subsection D. The section creates a presumption that is not only not always true, but maybe untrue a substantial amount of the time. And I just it doesn't appear anywhere that I've ever seen in any other statute, and just places the burden of proof in a criminal proceeding on the defendant. I just think that's a mistake, and it won't render the rest of the bill ineffective.
That is that's the bill.
Yeah.
No, excuse me.
Subsection D.
Yeah, okay. I had underlined and I was.
Oh, we had that was
the
only new language.
That was the only new language.
That's all new language.
Yes. Mr. Frederick.
I think that the language is constitutional. And what this simply does is it creates a rebuttable presumption, or not even that, it's prima facie evidence that the that the lessee or the owner was the driver if other competent evidence identifies the vehicle as the vehicle in question. And what it basically does is, and this is, there have been a couple of cases, there's the Menard case and one of the two of the other cases. It does not shift the burden of the burden of either persuasion or the burden of proof. There's one case that says that it's an unconstitutional denial of due process to shift the burden of persuasion onto the defendant in a criminal case when normally the prosecution has the burden to show each and every element of the crime. This doesn't do it. It simply says this shall be evidence that the court may consider.
More than evidence.
Prima facie evidence.
Well, that's more than just evidence.
Unless it's rebutted.
Mr. Chairman, I know exactly what this is for. The guy drives by the school bus, you get his license plate number, mm-hmm. and you convict him of this crime because you have his license plate number, and he has to prove affirmatively that he was not driving the car. You don't do that for vehicular homicide. You don't do that for any other crime. I don't care whether it's constitutional or not. It's bad policy. Or if it's good policy, we have to do it for every other crime that can be committed with a motor vehicle.
Let me ask this. If we adopted Fox's amendment, deleted Section D, a school bus driver observed somebody going
Max,
without stop. Is
evidence rule 303, that's what you need to look
at. He has the license number and turns it in. Then what happens? Can somebody still be convicted even though the driver of the school bus did not specifically see the face and likeness of the car driver? They haul the owner of the car in to court. Can you determine who was driving? You know, can you, through the process of the law, determine who was driving so that you can convict this person? Mr. Thompson, you can respond.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if I might ask Representative Fox, would you feel more comfortable if this were rather than a criminal penalty, a civil penalty?
Well, I don't know who would do the, Chairman, I don't know who would be the one to assert the civil penalty, so I'm not sure that would work. What I was thinking is maybe can you impose, in effect, a penalty on the vehicle? I don't know how that works, but.
Start doing things in rem, like in Edmonton?
Yeah, right.
Seize your car?
The answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, is I don't know the real answer, but the fact is that it seems to me if you can piece together a criminal case based on showing that Joe Blow traveled from this place to this place, and he admits that, he just denies that he was, he says, I wasn't driving my car, and if you can establish a sufficient circumstantial case to prove to a jury or with an infraction.
Well,
it's beyond a reasonable doubt that he was the driver of the car, yes, you will do it. But the point is the same problem you have, proof problems with vehicular homicide, it's the same problem you've got with using motorized vehicles in a closed area. It's the problem repeats itself. And what I'm suggesting is that the solution should apply to some of those others as well, if we ever find one. I'm not convinced this is it.
Well, the problem is that it's damn difficult to prove. That's that nobody's going to admit they were driving from point A to point B. They're just going to shut up and not say anything. And if you got a prosecutor who's got a witness who says, I saw this car with this license run through the school bus, and that's all he's got, he ain't got a case. And it's damn tough to get more than that. But I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, it's a tough situation. And I'm just my kids, get off the bus on Hillside Drive, people doing 50 miles an hour along there, and I'm just as concerned about it as anybody is, but I don't know the answer to it. Maybe just better enforcement. Maybe you have a patrol car out there once, policemen during the times the school buses are running up, running around, and connect, hook him up with a radio to the guy that's driving the school bus, so they can radio in, hey, this guy in a blue Mustang just ran, and you got a cop within a mile or two, we can chase him down. Enforcement, to me, is probably a better solution. I'm afraid I'm probably going to have to, reluctantly, gritting my teeth, vote for Clarkson's amendment.
Call for the question.
Wait, I want to remember. There's a whole rule of evidence on this, and it's here in your pack. It's the effect of presumptions in general in criminal cases. And there have been, in Alaska, statutes that have dealt with evidence of knowledge of insufficient funds and evidence of intent to defraud. And those statutes have been quoted by the U.S., by the state Supreme Court in at least one case. And just a couple minutes I've had to review, I can't find where those particular statutes are in the revised criminal code. But there's a whole line of Supreme Court cases on this, and the Rule 303, Evidentiary Rule 303, was carefully drafted to get around any constitutional problems. There's not only a criminal rule on the subject, but there are also other types of, there are presumptions in civil rules also, but the 303 specifically deals with the criminal situation. The Advisory Committee on the Federal Rules has dealt with the same problem, because the federal rules of evidence, as I recall, speaks to the same issue, but I'm not sure about that. It's axiomatic that a verdict can't be directed against the accused in a criminal case, and that is the general policy, and that's why you have to be careful constitutionally. The Judge Weinstein, who did the commentary on this, says that Weinstein's evidence, which is the main federal text, on the federal rules, presumptions are utilized to overcome two separate problems in federal law. Primarily, this function is to lessen the prosecution's burden of establishing guilt by authorizing shortcuts in proof and exerting pressure on the person with the most knowledge to come forward with an explanation. In addition, the presumption may serve the secondary function of making undesirable activities amenable to federal jurisdiction. The commentary indicates that that subdivision A, which is what we're using here, subdivision B simply defines a prima facie evidence language as creating a presumption. It allows presumptions to perform their intended function, but prevents them from exerting too great an impact on the outcome of a case. If a presumption is created by the legislature or the courts, it serves as an incentive for the accused to submit rebuttal evidence. If no rebuttal evidence or insufficient evidence is offered, the court, without using the word presumption, will instruct the jury that it may but is not bound to infer the existence of the presumed fact from proof of the basic fact. And I've dealt with this. I took an appeal in a DWI case in the Superior Court on this point based on the old DWI statute and secured a reversal. So you can, these things are legal and constitutional if they're drafted correctly. And I think this language is drafted correctly. Such an instruction is couched purely in terms of a permissible inference. No attempt is made to guide the jury in assessing the sufficiency of the inference to prove guilt. Mandatory instruction is in the nature of a mild comment on the evidence. No good reason appears why the legislature or the courts cannot require a specific non-binding instruction when they deem it desirable. Seems, and this goes on for several pages, seems to me that the language is in accord with precedent. It's in accord with the rule of evidence, and I think it makes a lot of sense, because I've tried cases where two people have been in the car,
and the cop approaches them, the things stop, there's movement in the car, and the sober one winds up in the driver's seat. It's not exactly the same situation, but it's pretty similar, and it makes it...
Where's the presumption there?
Well,
practical effect of it is to make people pay a fine when in many cases they won't be guilty of a crime because they weren't driving the car, but aren't prepared to have a jury trial on a $50 traffic ticket.
Let me ask you this question. Why wouldn't... If I loaned my car to somebody else and they... And I was, that car was reported as passing school bus. First thing I do when I come into court is say, hey, I wasn't driving that car. I loaned it to Joe Dokes. And Joe Dokes was driving the car. And it seems to me, does that get me off the hook once I blow the whistle on Joe Dokes?
Not necessarily. Because by your statement, you're not establishing another presumption. You're only offering some proof that may or may not rebut the presumption depending upon how that proof's interpreted by the trier of fact. And we don't have to worry about juries and jury instructions in here. You're never going to get to a jury. This is a infraction, and an infraction does not warrant a jury. On top of that, the infraction also is 9 times out of 10 going to be handled by a magistrate. At most, it'll be a district court judge.
Whether it's a jury or not, the same principle.
I get the policy.
Okay. As many years in favor of the amendment, raise your hand.
That's Claxton's amendment.
That's Claxton's amendment, yes. Claxton, Mr. Pettyjohn, Mr. Taylor. As many as opposed, raise your hands. The law changed, I believe. The motion passes.
What, 3-3?
Yeah.
4-2.
4-2.
Oh, and this is sad.
Mr. Chairman, you're ready for a motion to move the bill?
Yeah, I have another amendment.
Okay. Oh, yes, by the way, the court system has a request.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure, what was the amendment and what happened here?
Section D has been removed from the 4-2 vote.
You deleted Section D?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can offer it later.
I'm weak on that amendment.
So work on it.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer an amendment then to restore the effect of the section you just deleted, which may make the committee more comfortable.
Okay, it comes prepared here.
Yeah, why make us go through all that?
Cecil Vanley says the...
What this amendment would do would be what you just did, delete Section D, and it would offer in its place what is written as Section E, which would make it change it to a civil penalty rather than a criminal.
Infraction is also $300, is that correct?
Yeah.
So we're talking the same thing.
Chairman? I have a problem with that because presently it is a criminal penalty to drive by a school bus. And I really don't want to turn that into a civil penalty because if it's just a civil penalty, it cannot have effect on license, and that's probably the most significant part of it. The Wrangler's a standard $100 fine if you drive by a school bus. It may be more or less in other areas, but it also carried 6 points on your license, and that's the one that sinks home because you only get 2 of those and your license is gone.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to call Mr. George Edwards, who is the attorney who has assisted me in drafting this legislation, and if he might speak to Representative Taylor's concern in this amendment.
Okay,
thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Representative Taylor, that Section D would remain in the bill, so the penalty would remain intact for drivers of the vehicles.
There are two E's?
What? Well, yeah, if you knock out D.
I thought this knocks out D.
Okay, D's gone.
And it replaces
and then it's replaced by the next paragraph, which is now paragraph E. All right.
In the bill.
Right. Paragraph E in the existing bill would remain in the bill.
Right. Well, then this would become F?
No. It would become D.
It would become D.
It would become D, wouldn't it?
No. No. The E in the bill is now D. The E in the present bill is now D.
That's what we're hoping.
Because D is gone. So this is E. The amendment is E. Make that a D.
Right.
Okay. Now make this a D.
Understood.
All right.
Oh, so D, E becomes D, and now this is it.
Yeah, we have an additional adding something.
Or it's something that's trade in the new world.
It's like the W and pig, it's silent.
Okay. Back to me.
That's what the judges do.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't go a long ways.
So what you're saying is the criminal penalty remains.
Right.
Particularly for those people who can identify the driver.
That's right. You'd have to identify the driver still to get the criminal penalty. But in any event, you could go against the owner of the car civilly.
I see.
The only thing, I don't know if your copy has the word penalty changed to fine on it. I think it should say civil fine because that's the terminology that's used in the statutes otherwise.
Yeah. Mr. Boston, even more frightening.
What do you pay a fine to if it's a fine?
A civil fine, Mr. Chairman, it would go to the general fund. It would go through the court just like a civil penalty. And right now, the smoking offense, for instance, smoking in public is handled by a civil fine.
What's the difference between a $100 civil fine and a $100 criminal infraction, except for the demerits, except for the points?
The civil fine would be similar to damages in a civil lawsuit. It would have the same implications, it seemed to me, as damages in a civil suit. It has no implication of criminal conduct.
It won't show up on your background check if you're a teacher.
Mr. Edwards.
I think that this is unconstitutional. Because what it does is it makes an owner of a vehicle that happens to drive past a school bus illegally liable for a substantial civil fine. When the owner, like let's say I have a son who's going to be driving shortly, and he just drives the car, and passes a school bus, it's going to cost me $300, and I haven't done anything, and I don't think that's constitutional.
You're the one who created.
And not only that. And not only that, the effect of this, of course, is to reduce the burden of proof. That's the other change. The other difference between a civil penalty and a criminal penalty is that one's beyond a reasonable doubt. So you're even more likely.
You don't know my
I like D better than I like this.
Yeah, I like this better.
Chairman, one thing I might point out, the intention here is that the owner of the vehicle is on notice that if the owner lets someone else use his car who's not a responsible individual and that car is then used improperly, the owner is obligated for having used the bad judgment of allowing someone else to use it. The owner is on notice of that. South Dakota uses a similar they use civil penalties in this same situation.
We have sent a letter of intent. Don't drive in South Dakota.
I'm even more fearful of this one than I was the previous one. At least there was an opportunity to come in and rebut. All this would require is literally turning in the license plate number, having the police check the registration, and they're going to send out a bill for $300. The only proof you would possibly have would be able to show that your car had been dismantled and parked during that period of time. Couldn't possibly have violated the law. My concerns are that any person with a large fleet of vehicles in this state, whoever the registered owner of those vehicles is, if they're a corporation, is probably not too bad. They're not going to lose anything other than a few bucks. But
anybody offer the amendment?
I will offer the amendment, but I won't offer it until I can figure out a way to. Well, I did offer it, so I can't say I didn't offer it. I'll offer the amendment, but I want to amend the amendment, take care of a situation where somebody steals your car.
Yeah, there's that problem.
you know, if somebody steals your car, not only does a son of a bitch steal your car, but you get hit $300 because he drove by a school bus. Talk about insult to injury.
Each time he went by the school bus.
Probably the commission of a crime like Rahul Christopher.
He might pass a whole fleet.
You go to debtor's prison and he's on probation.
Are you sure you were all for this thing?
Well, yeah, I kind of like it, actually.
Question.
Well, we'll do it on the floor. That's okay. Yeah. I withdraw the amendment. We'll do it on the floor, Dave. We'll figure something out.
Okay, we do have a proposed amendment to the court system.
I move, now, this is explained in Carla Forsythe's letter of April 2, and she has two suggestions. I do not like the second suggestion. The first suggestion, which is deleting the first sentence from what is presently subsection E and will be the new subsection D because of the Clarkson Amendment, deleting the following language: a person charged under this section is required to enter a court appearance, and the reasons are set forth in Ms. Forsythe's letter. I agree with what she says. And I'll do
it. You're amending to take that out?
Yeah. In other words, you can send your bail.
Sure.
I'll object.
Sure. Okay.
This is an offense that where they should come before the court. It shouldn't be a straight mail-in bail. A mail-in bail situation would allow them to establish a $50 fine or a $25 fine, and then the person would mail that amount in and never have to appear. We're talking of 6 points on the driver's license. That's significant. That's the same as negligent drive. And we're also talking here of what could have been a super dangerous situation. And when the person comes before the court and pleads out, then there is at least usually going to be some type of police report that the judge can look to and say, this guy just missed four kindergarten kids who all dove in a ditch, you know. That may be a lot different than the fellow who passed two lanes out away from one where there was no one in danger. I think it's something where they should appear in front of the court.
I would throw the opinion.
I think, yeah, of course.
They're doing
the
it right now. I'll put it there. Well, it's a mandatory court appearance today.
Don't worry about it. You drew it. The motion's not there anymore.
Okay. It is mandatory at the present time?
Yes.
Then why not proposing the amendment?
We're worried
not
about
be
the court system. We're worried about the workload. Right? Taylor? You're worried about the workload.
Okay, then. The amendment is withdrawn.
They're all required to today.
Bill's report is amended.
Any other amendments?
Before we pass the bill out, I want to talk to Mr. Thompson about.
Is it related to the bill?
Yeah, it certainly does.
We've got one other small matter to take care of, so let's
roll on with it.
Yeah,
we've
still got a quorum here.
I still say that's the only
question. For the moment, let's
take up. Tell them to change their equipment and they'll solve the problem.
They are, Miss Kelly. Right?
Now we got this harassment bill.
Miss, I want to talk to you after.
That's the problem.
Move it out. Get up. Move it out.
Well, we can direct the
misdemeanor carries up to 1,000.
Oh, I don't know. Who?
Could this be changed?
In the series.
I don't know.
Your judges aren't giving away $300 fines right now. They start giving a regular $300 fine up there.
The school buses stop parking.
Hurry.
We've been giving 100 here in Southeast for a long, long time, and that's low. We should have adjusted that up a long time ago. You hit them with a straight $300, it'll get everybody's attention.
Is that depend on the location?
Yes.
But it's something that I would suggest to the presiding judge, and you're just doing a change.
Brown?
They're outside talking for a moment. Let's take up House Bill 31. This is Senator Representative Schultz's bill on an act relating to the destruction of hindrances of lawful hunting, fishing, and trapping. The suggestion was, I think it's a good one, that we at least be consistent and have the fine designated with appropriate language that Mr. clarification you could put in, class B instead of naming the fine.
Should be class C.
Class C?
Is there a class C?
No.
Misdemeanor.
That's an infraction.
Infraction.
No, it's called a violation.
Oh, violation.
You got 30 days in jail and a $500 fine?
I'd make it a class A.
That's a B.
It's a B.
Oh, I thought there was 30 days, 90 days.
Oh, you're talking about this bill. I'm sorry, I was in the wrong bill.
B is 90 days and $1,000.
Right.
Right, and C is 30 days and $500.
No, there is no C.
There is no C misdemeanor.
No, it's...
There's a C felony, but there's no C misdemeanor.
Well, maybe that's why this...
It goes A, B, infraction.
That was written because the fraction...
Okay, make it a B misdemeanor, then. Fine.
Okay, I didn't place this in motion, but I really moved my own place, because apparently this is about the right amount anyway. If we don't have any... a designated thing to match up to it, then we shouldn't bother to do it. I think the B probably is too much.
Where's the bill?
Okay, that's the motion. I mean, the bill is before us. We're now on House Bill 31.
We're going to come back to it?
Yes. We're ready to put the bill out right now, and unamended.
Right, I have that.
Okay. Mr. Fox.
Mr. Chairman, I have been here for all the meetings on this. I've consistently voted against this bill on the floor. I plan on voting on this against this bill again on the floor. I trust my governor will protect the state from this legislation. I move the big bill with unanimous appropriation.
Individual recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, object for a moment here. Had you worked out in changing this to a class B?
We decided not to do that.
Because nothing matches up to it right. The fine is too low to be a B. It's 500 is right.
Is the sponsor going to have a problem if we don't with it?
No. The sponsor's even glad.
Just get it out.
This is 31.
I withdraw my objection.
Okay. Yeah. Objection's withdrawn.
Should anyone make it a class A?
Huh? Hearing none. No. House Bill 31 passes out with individual recommendation.
I move House Bill 240. Amended.
I already did. I think
I'd like to go for a C felony.
Is there objection to Mr. Blossom's movement? Motion.
Poetry and motion.
Stop squirming there, Mr. Motion. I have a voice.
Oh, let's get out of here. Great.
Is there objection to the motion to pass out House Bill 240 with individual recommendation? Hearing no objection, the bill will move out.
That's 240.
That's 240.
Okay.
I move we adjourn.
Before you adjourn, I would like for you to look over the weekend, House Bill 224. This is a bill by M.M. Miller on mandatory seat belts. If the committee has no problems with this bill, I would like to waive it. My suspicion that might be the case. All right. Mm. The bill will be scheduled.
We love you, but we can't.
I can't believe you tried that.
Well,
at least it was up front. I respect that.
Does it carry a Class C felony on you?
Infraction. Okay. Is there further business still before the body? If not,
sure, I'm going to get those belt violators.
Do this.
That was
the school bus thing.